In this episode, my friend Greg sits down with us and shares his preference for patient capital. Thinking, James, I don't even do anything with these policies. Yet, he has financed 3 cars and working on a joint venture with his son. We had fun, and I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you. Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm excited today to have my friend Greg on with us. And, you know, I'm going to let Greg tell, you know, share with you, the listener, whatever he wants to share. But Greg became a client, I think, back in 2018. We've become friends. And I think that you're going to enjoy this episode. So thanks for listening. Good morning, Greg. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you, you know, carving out the time to share with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. Been a listener for a long time. I'm not sure I've listened to every episode, but I've listened to the vast majority of them.
Perfect. Well, would you, I'd just like to know, you know, how maybe you were first exposed to this idea that you could become your own banker, the infinite banking concept, and then, you know, kind of how you got exposed, what path did you go down? You know, what did you listen to? What did you do? What did you watch? You know, what just your experience, and, you know, as much as or as little as you'd like to share, you know, here, bring it up to date. I mean, it's been so, if I'm looking, you became a client in 2018. You know, I don't know when you first got exposed to it, but, you know, you didn't just wake up on the morning of, you know, June of 2018 and say, oh, I'm going to go buy a bunch of life insurance, you know. So just share with us, please, what you will.
Right. So it was kind of a winding path, my exposure to it. And it was an indirect kind of, this was a side effect, getting involved in the life insurance thing was a side effect of what I was really trying to accomplish. And so it began in the first step that on the path that got me here was in 2009 when I started an MBA program. And in one of the classes, the professor had us sign up for this newsletter. And it was this guy that it was mostly about finance and such, investments and what have you. And it didn't mean that much to me. And I've forgotten the name of the guy in the meantime. But it was a great writer, and he would link to other authors and stuff. And I got connected to another newsletter from that initial one. And then from there to Tom Woods. And then from Tom Woods, he started doing this podcast with Bob Murphy, right? And so this is over multiple years, 2015, 16, 17, all that kind of stuff. And you probably know better than I do when Bob Murphy started a podcast with Carlos Lara, right? And so I was just a big fan of Bob Murphy. And so I just started listening to that thing. I had no idea what the podcast was about. Right. And when he started talking about this life insurance and the things he does with the business recovery, I didn't know, but I was a fan of Bob. So I kept listening to him. Well, eventually he starts saying he's going to be in Fort Worth for this conference, life insurance. And right. This whole concept he was talking about, it was going to be there. Well, at this point, I thought I understood what Bob was talking about. Right. The concept and all that other stuff, but it was just notional. I hadn't read anything. It was just the listening. Well, he said he's going to be in Fort Worth. And I'm like, well, hey, I'm here in San Antonio. It's not too far to Fort Worth. I'm going to go meet the guy. And so I signed up for your conference thing, went up there, and we had it was the first evening, and we were in the conference room, the hotel conference. And Bob was there, and he was meeting people, you know, shaking hands, saying hi. Nelson was there as well, and I got to shake his hand. But again, I'm just a fish out of water. I'm the new guy wandering around alone in this room. I didn't know anybody else there. Sit down. We're having drinks. We're having conversation with, you know, these random people, and I'm kind of explaining my situation, where I came from. And like, I'm just here to learn, see what this is about. And when it would come down to, you know, it's this life insurance thing and we're using it for such and such, every person said, I wish I had started earlier. So it was intriguing. Everybody was, you know, excited about it. You know, and we go through the presentation or whatever. That's the when I first saw and purchased the book, right? Becoming Your Own Banker. Went home and read that. And honestly, it wasn't too long afterwards where I called you and we started the process.
That's pretty interesting. 2009 MBA program,
mm-hmm.
reading newsletters, and went to one newsletter, and then another newsletter led you to Tom Woods, and that's pretty cool. Tom Woods, and Bob Murphy, friends. Bob was a guest on Tom Woods' show many times, and then Bob started his own podcast, and then Carlos Lara, you know, the businessman, and he's still a board director. A co-director of the Nelson Nash Institute, Carlos Lara. Mm-hmm. And then that was 2017, I believe, that we hosted that. And at that time, and this is, you know, just history, really. But at that time, Nelson was winding down away from giving his 10-hour presentations. And the Nelson Nash Institute was developing a program where that could be sponsored across the country, right? And so now, James Nether, yours truly, sponsored the first one in 2017. They did a couple of other pilot things unsponsored around the country. So that was it. I forgot, but I mean, that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. That brings back a lot of memories for me. And so did you buy the Becoming Your Own Banker book there at the event?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. And then, man, thanks for sharing that. That's cool. I love going down memory lane. And that was in 2017. That was, you know, we could, in my office, you know, we have done a lot of events over the years, you know, going way back, you know, 2026 and even beyond that, 2003. But the infinite banking concept events that we hosted, we was generally open to the general public, right? And that was one of them that was open. So I'm sure we had clients there and, you know, non-clients and clients from other agents or wherever, you know, it was really kind of low threshold to attend. And of course, you know, you want everybody to be, well, I do. I want everybody to be, I mean, I wish everybody could have met Nelson. I wish everybody, you know, could meet Carlos Lara. I wish everybody could, you know, meet and understand or, you know, read, some of the works of Bob Murphy. Anyway, that was very interesting. So you bought the book there, you went home, and then, did you share it with too many friends or?
You know exactly what happened, right? You start talking about this thing to people who have never heard of it before. And frankly, I had, it's funny, I want to back up a little bit. So my wife and I met in middle school or junior high, and her lifelong friend is married to a man that was a couple years ahead of us in school. But the four of us have known each other. We're still friends to this day. My friend is he's a president of a insurance company. He's worked his entire career. He's been in insurance. And for all but the last 6 or 7 years of that, I have mocked him and made fun of him and whatever else for being in insurance, because I think it's such a scam and this and that, you never get paid and blah, 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 blah. Well, here I am, you know, one day show up with this new book. And, you know, now I'm proselytizing about, you've got to do this. You have to read this thing. Like, it was amazing. It was a night and day shift. And so here I get the book and read it. And you know how it is, right? You don't fully understand it. You've got to read it a couple of times before you remember things, right? You start piecing it all together from the things you've heard in the podcast and what have you. So, yes, I come back and I read it and I start telling them about this thing, but they're not as interested as I am and they don't get it. And to this day, you say you're a good salesman. I'm a terrible salesman because I haven't converted anybody. So anyway, time will tell on that. But
I got to say, actually, I've been accused of being the worst salesman in the world.
And yeah.
I wear that. I love that. Anyway, keep going. Sorry.
So I had my disdain for insurance is only matched for my disdain for things in the stock market, 401ks, all of that other kind of stuff. I love the prospect, right? You invest things in a company where you believe in their fundamentals and right, choose good and bad and what have you, companies to invest in based on these fundamentals. But then reality is, right, it's just a casino. And you not only have this risk of not making any money, you stand to lose 100% of your investment. And so I did all the things they tell you to do. You put money in the 401 and you put money in your IRA. And hey, I even have an independent stock account and play around here and there. But I was never comfortable with it. I never liked it. And I certainly never got rewarded for it. Every time I'd have a win, you'd next have a loss. So, so the getting introduced right to the aspects of the life insurance and understanding right the contract and the guarantees and the regulations and the laws protecting the insurance companies right and protecting the contract holders. Just a whole bunch of that appealed to me. I was willing to trade off a lot of potential upside for protection against a huge potential downside. So put all that together with the notion, right? Just the basic purpose of life insurance, then this concept of doing the banking, and then this concept of guaranteed growth. It just made sense to me, right? It just appealed. Appealed to me, in contrast to the other things I was used to investing in. This is before you even consider, as Nelson points out, right in his book, where people try to invest that last 5% of their income, right, to make up for all of the other financing costs they're spending, anyway. It just appealed to me. I could see that this was for me, not instantly, but pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so, when the time came, I had my birthday's in June, and by the time I started talking with you, going through the process and whatever, we were approaching the end of the year. We were late November, early December in the year I turned 50, and I don't know who it was, but somebody in your office, maybe you, brought up the concept of backdating it, right? And so getting that extra premium payment in place, right? Getting that growth started earlier, starting that exponential curve as soon as I could. I mean, I jumped in with both feet. I did that back payment and then maxed it out, did the paid up every penny I could. And then when the time came in the next June to make the payment, I mean, I've been maxing it out every year since.
That's awesome. So your birthday's in June, mine is too, and so November, I think you said, and then so that we backdated to save age, which you can do when it's appropriate, and that does allow you to pay a premium in June, and then 6 months later, really your second annual premium is due. So I appreciate you bringing that up, you know, because I was born in June. I have an awful lot of premium payments that are due in June. You know, I'd go to December and I want to backdate to save age. You know, you do that 3 or 4 or 5 times over your lifetime. And it's like you wake up one day, finally, you're like, oh, my gosh, I got a lot of premium to pay in June. So do you regret? And I don't want to speak for you, but, you know, looking back, when you say that you jumped in both feet you know, you're all in. And I get you have a kind of a longer, you know, being exposed to finance, you know, in an academic way, kind of leading you down the path. I mean, so it's really almost 10 or so years later, and you've, you know, heard these great guys talking about various things, but including the infinite banking concept, you know, Tom Woods, Carlos, and then Bob Murphy. So, I mean, that's just kind of a long path, you know. But when you finally, when you get to the point where it makes sense to you, your experience, and, you know, we all should make decisions based on our experience and our knowledge. There's no question. So if I shorten up my question, you know, looking back, you know, do you is there anything that you do regret or wish you'd have done different, or, you know, share with me looking back over that time, you know, you're like, I'm jumping in all, maxing out the premium, mm-hmm. paying the every mm-hmm. dollar I can pay in premium. Is there any regrets to that, or?
So, kind of going back to the 401k and my other investments, I hope it's typical in a way, like I wasn't doing something unusual to begin with. I also hope it's not typical that other people see through this stuff and realize you need to jump in and pay the most premium you can, right? Get the biggest policy you can. And like you've said before, right? Maybe to the point where it's a little uncomfortable, where you're sweating a little bit when that next premium's coming. But considering that I had, you know, my company offers a generous match on 401k contributions. Well, I was maxing that out. And every time I would get each year when you get your merit raises, well, I would devote most of that to my 401k. So I was putting a substantial amount of money in the 401k. Not as much in the stock market and not as much in the IRAs, but, you know, I'm doing the things they're telling you to do and thinking, well, I'm going great and I'm sailing along towards retirement. Everything's going to be fine. Get to the point where I decide that I want to do this life insurance thing and start talking to you about how much premium I ought to be paying. And we start looking at some numbers that are, you know, that's an eye-opening number, especially in comparison to this thing you've been doing in the 401k where you think you're doing great. So you ask, do I have any regrets? Well, the regret is that eye-popping number should have been bigger, right? But you've got no way to know, right? You haven't been here before. And so you think, well, man, this is a huge number. Certainly this will be great. And it is. I'm very pleased with the growth in my account. I call you guys each year and ask for the in-force illustration. And I love the way it's going. But I wish it'd been bigger. And I think about this every time. Like I said before, in that first meeting I went to, when that man looked at me and said, he was wearing his cowboy hat, like, I wish I had started earlier. I'm like, I remember that every time, every time I have a conversation about this concept, I tell people, I bring that up, like, I wish I had started earlier.
Yeah. Thanks, sir. I know, I don't know, but potentially there might be a listener that's uninitiated that would hear you and your experience in the stock market and look back and say, well, you know, the stock market's gone up, you know, to such and such, and you could have done that, you know, and maybe do some risk analysis and maybe reduce your risk or whatever, you know, modify, adjusted, you know, your approach to the stock market. And so that may be very well, you know, people who love the market, they love the market, and God bless you.
Mm-hmm. This is not
an either or choice. But I talk to people every day, and I mean, this is Friday that we're recording here, and this is January. So this episode would likely be released sometime in February. This is January 31. I talk to people every day, all day long, and I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to in the last few weeks that share their experience in the stock market. And it's not all good. You know, it's just not all good. In the very time period that you have been paying premium, right? So much premium that, you know, you're colleagues, you can't even talk to them, you know, and if you do talk to them, they insult your intelligence and my integrity and the life insurance company's ratings or whatever. There have been, people have lost significant amounts of money, you know, not only in the stock market, but in cryptocurrency and real estate and all of those other things. And so, I mean, I just want to, I appreciate you sharing that, and I'm just sharing my experience. And, you know, the market does not always go up.
All right.
So, yeah, and then even going back earlier, you know, this is life insurance, right? You cannot buy life insurance without a death benefit. It does not come any other way. And then with you, you know, in your 50s, I think you said, when you started, it's like you have children, and then is it – fair to say that you're married and have a wife? Oh, you mentioned her earlier, right? So here's a married man with children. Tell me what's wrong with having a death benefit. And then did that do anything for you? Did that check any boxes, you know, as just as a responsibility of a man? And
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's when we have the meetings, I've been to every one of your customer conferences, or the last three of them, I think.
Really?
since you restarted, yes, sir.
Oh, perfect.
But you're so busy. You're one armed paper hanger at those things, right? And there's 1,000 people that want to talk to you. But the last time we talked, and we just had a couple of minutes, I told you, like, it just brings peace to me. Like, as worried as I was about different things in the market, right? And even the 401k, where you can't make all of these changes, you tend not to make these changes throughout the year, right? You pick something in their limited menu of choices, and you stick with it for a year or 6 months, right? Or you get into the age staggered bonds. Yeah. Right, target date. And just go with that and let the things do it. And let those brilliant money managers manage your money for you, and everything will be great. But I never liked it. I don't like that uncertainty. I don't like that open-endedness. And so, yes, it checked a huge box for me because I'm like so many people that you've talked about before. The thing you've said before is that, right, people's notion of life insurance is based upon other people's misconception. And that was me. I had no idea. The only thing I knew about life insurance was in the Christmas show, where he says, well, what about this? Can I use the cash value on my, I forgot the show, but
it's
can I
use the Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Yes.
Yeah.
That's all anybody knows about life insurance. Well, I was in that list. Right. And like I said, I made fun of my friend who made a career out of insurance, but once you sit down, think about it, realize what it is. If I used it for nothing else than the death benefit, if I didn't get a single other benefit out of this thing, it would have been worth it. It brings me that peace, because the death benefit that I bought is a lot of money. And the death benefit that I continue to increase because I continue to invest in it and maximize my paid up additions is even more peaceful. Now, the fact that I'm going to be able to use that for investments that I want to, or to use it for retirement income, that's just cherries on top. Yeah. But yes, it checked a huge box, and I didn't even realize that was missing before. Right? It's this thing I stumbled across, and it I love it. It brings me peace.
I love that. You know, there's a lot there. You can invest, and you can enjoy passive income and quote unquote retirement, and you can leave a tax-free legacy death benefit, net death benefit. You can have all of those if you want. And if you don't want, it's going to do just fine. Mm-hmm. Right. That's powerful. And, you know, I love you. Look, you know, I think we all may have some favorite movies and what have you. And I know I may be dating myself, but It's a Wonderful Life, black and white, you know, Jimmy Stewart. And I watch that every year. I just like it. I love it. And, you know, I produced a Banking with Life DVD in 2013. We released it on the 100 year anniversary of the Federal Reserve. Right. So it was on purpose. Yep. And it took a clip out of that, exactly what you're talking about. And of course, you know, you learn some things about copyright working with the producer, and I got Jason Rink to produce that, and he's a beautiful movie maker, filmmaker, and an Austrian and a libertarian. I'm not trying to pigeonhole him, but you know, the thinking aligns with Nelson's work, right? But I learned that if you, and we used a clip of that, what you're talking about, and I learned through Jason that if you use the video and the sound, then you're violating copyright, right? But the way we used it, I think it was without sound, I think. But that's George going to Mr. Potter, the banker, and he needs money. And the banker is the one that created the problem that he specifically needs money for right then, and has created the larger problem for the community bank, right? The savings and loan. It's a beautiful story when you understand what's really going on when it, in the context right. of the banker, right? And he's, and Mr. Potter's there, and he's like, George, what do you got? You got any stocks, bonds, real estate? You know what he got? He goes, well, I got a life insurance. He goes, you come to me with $1,000 measly policy. I love that. You know, and the fact is, George was undercapitalized. So he had to go to Mr. Potter, the gatekeeper, the banker, right? And then you're like, can I have? No, that's the whole point of this dividend paying life insurance as taught, structured as taught by Nelson Nash, becoming your own banker. So you can control the banking function. You could kick that banker out of his chair and walk out, or you would have never had to been there.
Exactly right.
You know, maybe putting more context to my feeling and my view of that clip than people care about, but that's a big deal to me. So thanks for mentioning that, you know?
Yeah.
And then, I got to ask, you know, your friend, because I love to give my friends a hard time. They give me a hard time, and all of our friends do, you know, if you love and care about them, it's okay. They love and care about you. So you busted your friend's chops that was in the insurance business forever. And then you bring him a book. You know, would you share any about that conversation?
So he didn't, I got him to read the book. Well, he didn't read it in front of me. I didn't witness this, but I believe him when he says he read it. But if you're not initiated, if you're not inclined to it, you can read this thing and just not get anything out of it, right? Yeah. It's a story. It's got these anecdotes in it. It's got these tables of numbers. It didn't grab him, right? Like you said, it's caught rather than taught. Well, he didn't catch it. But in a related to this, he has on himself and on his wife, they have life insurance policies that he bought independently, right? Just as you do, other people other than me do. And so over the years, I've talked to him about this, told him what I'm doing. So he gets the concept. He still hasn't caught it, but he was talking about purchasing something for his little ranch. He's got a 10 acre thing that he wanted some piece of equipment. I think he was wanting to replace a tractor. And I asked him about it. Had he thought about using cash value on his policy? And of course he hadn't. And he went and looked at it, called his agent. Next thing I know, he calls me back and says, hey, I just bought that tractor using cash, you know, out of my policy. So we're one step closer, right, to getting him to buying a banking policy. But I don't know any of the details. He showed me the cover page of his policy, but I don't know any of the details, you know, what do you call it? Participating, non-participating, any of that. So I've made some progress. I haven't converted him yet. I'm still waiting for my first sale.
I got it. That's awesome though. You know, here you got an insurance agent and he's got a life insurance policy and, you know, never really thought. And that's really, you know, Nelson really added scale to what you can do. Nelson didn't create the loan provisions in a life insurance company contract. Mm-hmm. You know, the life insurance companies did. And they did that years ago as a way to avoid lapsing a policy. Oh, we'll have some cash value in here. So if it'll endow in the future, right? And you can walk away with all your money. Oh, well, here's a loan provision. Instead of lapsing a policy, why don't now you can contractually take a loan against your cash value. It's like, I just you know, I think all of that's very cool. And whether the guy, you know, your friend actually buys life insurance or doesn't, at least you didn't harm him, you know, sharing Nelson's message. And so now he's controlling the banking function on that piece of equipment. I mean, that could be right. A big deal. You know, it is a right. big deal in my opinion.
Right. I did go out of my way and more than once to tell him, you got to pay the thing back, right? Don't, it's not free money. Right. Yeah. You have to pay it back. So I need to check up. I need to follow up with him on that. Make sure he's being a good banker.
Cause he's your friend. You can get away with it. Right.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Well, that's, I just think stuff like that is cool. You know, whether he's in a better position because of Nelson's work, you know, we got to meet and that's cool. So, if I go back to, you said you've been to all of our client events, and so we've had mm-hmm. three, and mm-hmm. I remember you being at the last one because we did talk, and I really do get the privilege of speaking to everyone. I just can't speak to everyone individually, right? And that's been beneficial. Even the first one, you got to meet Nelson, you got to meet Carlos Lara, you got to meet Bob Murphy, and you know, you'd been listening to these guys, and then you know, talking to the one gentleman in a cowboy hat mm-hmm. back in 2017, and of course that was really, we're hosting the Nelson Nash Institute's what was going to be their formal program for the general public, right? But the events that we've had in 2024, 2023, and 2022, which were really client only events, right? mm-hmm. I think maybe a friend or two was able to come. I don't really recall. But if you went to one, and I think they've gotten better personally, but then you come back to two more, and I understand you're in close proximity, you know, than somebody living across the country, but you obviously seen or felt or received some value there, you wouldn't come back. Cause I mean, you still got to pay for your trip, the hotel. And I mean, it's not like it's chump change attending. Right. Mm-hmm. So would you share with that? And I'm not trying to, you know, get you to promote me or our events. I just want to know your experience of attending those, please.
Yeah. And similar to telling people about this new concept, you know, I'm going to do this banking function with a life insurance policy. You get the same kind of weird looks when you tell somebody I'm about to go spend a weekend at a conference. I'm going to drive, right, and go spend money and meet with these people about this life insurance concept. And they're like, okay, we'll have fun with that. We'll see you next week or something. Yeah, nobody's asked about, hey, can I go? It's not like going to the beach. Anyway, so yes, I look forward to it every year. I love going, kind of like that first one. I haven't changed my tradition about showing up alone in a room full of people, right, that I know only in the barest way. Having been to three of them now, there's faces I recognize. There's a couple of people, first name basis, and I text with and what have you. We've come to know each other a little bit. But it's, I don't know. I'm going to sound weird about this, but I've just been fascinated with the presentations. You've had people from the life insurance companies there, senior people from the life insurance companies. You've had, I've forgotten his name, the gentleman that runs the Nelson Nash Institute. And he gave a fantastic talk, right, about, you know, the outcomes of two people with similar situations to begin with, and this man did what he was told to do in the stock market and the retirement accounts, and this man did what he did with the life insurance policies, and just the unbelievable difference, right? Then at this most recent one, man, I'm so bad at remembering names.
Barry Dunn.
Right. Barry Dyke gave a fantastic presentation. And then who's your partner?
Ryan. Yeah.
Ryan it brought his book out. He gave a fantastic talk. And I found myself there at one point. I was just staring at him, right? And he's doing it was like being in a class with a professor. And he after the thing was over, and you know, we go down and we're having the informal thing with the drinks afterward. He I every year I go up and you know, tell him he did a good job and thanks for that. And he's like, thank you for paying so much attention like that. You were so into this thing. And I'm like, I thought back about it. I'm like, I really was. I was just sitting there, not quite slack jawed doing it, but they're just fun. They're fascinating. I'm learning something every time. It was your presentation where you talked about using policies and multiple policies to do retirement income or passive income. And that was a whole section. It was you talked the things you talked about I had never considered before. The way it was structured, why you would do this versus this, or how you would include the next policy or the next person's policy, the next generation, what have you. It's fascinating. The more you think you know about this thing, the more you realize you don't, right? How little you know.
Yeah. I thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. I'm the same. I want to, you know, we invite people. I invite people that I want to hear. You know, I think that I don't know what they're going to say. I have an idea of what they're going to say. I've read their book. You know, part of Ryan's book. You know, I mean, I've read it before it was published, and Barry Dyke's book the same way. And so I want to hear what I think. I want to hear and what I think people should hear, right? And you know, and these people, well, I'm just saying that, thank you for sharing that. I don't know of anywhere in the country that literally that you could go attend and hear the things that you could hear at one of our events, right? And I know there's fabulous events all across the country. I attend my share of them. But thank you for saying that. And because it resonates, you know, it's like, and if you're
right. At the same time, you're sitting there at this table and you're given the opportunity to interact, right, with these people that are doing what you're doing. They've made the same decision. They've taken that step, and not just, they haven't thought about it, right? They've done it. They've written the big check, right? Either they just did it or they've done it multiple years. And so you hear the stories. I haven't used my policy for a lot. I did what everybody does, right? And you get it in place and you wait your 30 days and then you have to go do the loan because you want to make sure, right? You know, you take the test loan and then they send you the check, and it's kind of anticlimactic because they did what they said they would do. And it's like, great, you got a check. Well, now I have to pay you back, you know, because I don't want this loan. I want you to have the money. I want it to be growing over there. But you're talking to these people, and right, this gets back to the other guests you've had on the podcast. These stories, man, the people buying airplanes and people buying property and all kinds of land and real estate. I haven't done any of that. I have in kind of this way, you don't realize that you're doing it until you sit back and you're at the, you know, 7 year mark, and you realize I've financed 3 cars using my policy, but it's kind of unamazing. You just did it. Like, yes, of course I'm going to write my own check to buy this car and pay myself back on my own schedule, right? At my own scale, right? Using it to fully pay up the paid up additions. So you're doing this financing, whether it's something exotic or not, right? It's just mundane and every day. And so we've used it. It's done exactly what it's was advertised to do. And I love it.
That's awesome. I understand that. It's, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should or you necessarily want to, right? I've said it before. I remember when my oldest son, Jake, he's in his 30s now, but when he was a young guy, you know, he was fascinated with RVs for whatever reason, right? And so we would go to RV shows, right? Because so he could, you know, enjoy the RVs. And And we did a lot of other things. I mean, this is just, you know, a little idiosyncrasy thing that, you know, and the first time we went, Greg, it's my wife and I and Jake, you know, we're looking at this, and I think it was probably at the Fort Worth Convention Center, you know, multiple thousands of square feet full of all these different RVs from, you know, from campers to things that you could live in for a long time. And the price off the charts, you know, could be, you know, kind of affordable. I mean, of course, they're going to finance anything you want. But I just remember, and my wife and I have talked about this several times, you know, back then, and it's probably 20 years ago or so. It was a long time. And we would go, Jake would have fun, and we're looking and just the intimidation of what they wanted, some of the pricing of these things, right? And mm-hmm. You know, and you'd kind of want one. Of course, your kids are excited about it. You know, it's like we had any time to hit the road. We didn't. But, you know, me and my FOMO or whatever, I'm like, man, this would be cool. I'd kind of really like to have one, and couldn't afford a thing. You know, we could have financed them, of course. But, and then I'm just saying, you know, years later, we go back and it's like we could buy any one of them we wanted to and had no interest. You know, it's like if I can't. You know, oh, it makes me want it more. It's just maybe human nature. And now that you can, it's like, yeah, I have no interest in it. You know, anyway, that was.
Right. No, I understand the feeling 100%. I'm that way about old cars and stuff. I look at them like, man, I would love to have that thing. And I could easily buy it, but I'm not going to.
Yeah. The same thing with old cars. My first truck that I had to pay for. My dad was a wholesaler, right? He had a retail car lot at one time, but then he got into wholesaling and anyway, my first truck was a 1972 Chevrolet Custom Cheyenne four tone paint, right?
Man, working on a 68 C10 Custom right now.
Okay, perfect. So that truck, brand new, was $3,250. And I mean, it's a top of the line truck in 1972. Of course, I'm not talking about, this was my first truck, right, that I had to pay for and all that. And now, all these years later, you know, everything's digital and electronic. And, you know, I've got a barn, you know, and I've got plenty of room in the barn besides the equipment. You know, I could put a nice 72 Chevrolet truck in there just for nostalgia, just because I can. And then there's a gentleman in town that he has a really nice restored 1972 Chevrolet. And I'm like, man, I'd really want one of them. That would be really nice. And I could go buy one. And you know, and they're 25 to 65,000 or more now.
Yes, sir.
Right. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want one. I'll enjoy them and admire them when I see them, but I don't want one. Mm-hmm. You know, put it in the barn, drive it every 6 months, you know. I get that. But and then too, I want to bring out a point here, because I think it's a very valid point and an important point. You do not, the individual, you, the listener, me, you, Greg, do not have to do anything to make that policy better than it is. If it was structured properly, and structured properly means for the individual policy owner, right? Their circumstances, what they want to do, what they've been doing, what they understand. And so when it's structured properly, there's not one thing that you can do to make that policy better beyond paying a premium. Not one thing, right? So this idea that, you know, I've got to do something else, you know, or I'm not practicing honest banking is just not true. It's not. You know, there's nothing wrong with proper capital formation, proper capital long-term, proper capital formation. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And then typically, and you know, you wake up, I think you mentioned the 7-year marker. It could be the 5-year mark, could be the 3-year mark, could be the 4-year mark. You know, you're just steady paying premium. It was a lot when you first started. You didn't think you'd ever be paying that kind of premium. And then you start looking at the cash values in the third year and the fourth year. Not that there's, I'm not saying that there's not cash value in the first year or the second year. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I am saying you wake up at some time in the future and you look at those statements and you've already seen the illustrations. You've seen the annual statements if you care to look. But there's a point in time to the person that they wake up and say, my gosh, that's more cash than I thought I would have. Is that not mm-hmm. true?
It's absolutely. Like,
that's a beautiful absolutely. Thing. Yeah.
And it puts that discipline on you to keep making that premium payment, where if you were doing this comparable thing in the, if you were investing in the stock market or what have you, where maybe you take a year off or, you know, you scale it back a little bit or you have a loss and you're not as excited, right? And you just quit paying at all. This thing puts that discipline, right? And you see it grow, you see the results on the illustrations, on the annual statements. And not only am I not discouraged, right? I'm more encouraged to pay it. It keeps growing. It keeps getting better. That wheel keeps spinning faster, right? That exponential curve is doing what it does.
I love that.
I love it.
I do too. You know, it's like the death benefit, you know, and especially in the infinite banking footprint, you know, it's like people diminish, devalue, don't consider the value of the death benefit. And there's absolute value. You can't buy it any other way. The cash value must equal the death benefit at age 120 in today's policies. My question is, do you want a little money at 120? Or a lot of money at 120. Well, James, I'm not going to live to 120. Okay, well, the exponential curve that you mentioned, is that curve exists. That cash value must grow to the death benefit, whether you live to 120 or not, right? So do you want a little death benefit or a lot on a properly structured policy? And it does make a difference on the structure. You want a legitimate death benefit, not only because you may have obligations, you know, whether they're business or personal, you know, maybe you don't have any children, maybe you don't have anybody you love, but maybe you have institutions or entities that you do love or support and care about, and you want your support to exist beyond your life expectancy, beyond your graduation. You can't. There's no better way that I'm aware of to solve for that other than properly structured dividend paying whole life insurance. I don't want to, you know, go off into the weeds, but, you know, the idea of discipline is akin to the death benefit. I don't really need the death benefit. I'm going to go out and invest in real estate or whatever, but it doesn't, there's no required investment from an investment company. Right, they're not going to bill you every year or every month to make an investment. You have to opt into that program, right? So it does require discipline, and it puts, in my language and my understanding, it puts form to your discipline when it comes to life. And that is that's a characteristic that should not be discounted. You know, and I get early on when we all start, we're paying the, where am I going to get the money? I don't know. Right? I don't know. And you may not either. You might have an idea, but the future being unknown, you don't know. You have a good idea, maybe. Okay. Well, if I'm going to pay a large premium, whatever it is, and they don't have to be big numbers either, but large to you, right, when you're starting, it's like, oh my gosh, maybe I am uncomfortable. That's a big number. Where am I going to get the money? But you did it. And then you had the discipline to continue doing it. That second, third, and fourth premium becomes easier and easier to pay, in my opinion, if things are done right and you have an understanding of what you're doing and why you're doing it and the structure is proper. Which,
all right. And you see it. It's easy to see the result. Like you said, you get that in-force illustration and you compare it to the original, and they're different, but that number is growing. All of those columns are growing. It's doing what it does. And so why wouldn't you be encouraged to continue, right? It just makes sense, right? Maybe I'm just a particularly terrible investor, but I was never happy with the stock market or the 401ks, right? And, you know, you've said it before as well. Sometimes, right, what is it? The banker, the seller, and the buyer are gonna two out of three ain't bad. So, right, God, I'm messing that up. But
it's all right.
The stockbroker always gets paid, whether your account goes up or not. He gets paid, right? Yeah. Whether I did or not, you know, he's not concerned with, because I'm in this 401k or then these RRAs, and he can't get mad at and easily quit, move it to somebody else. And even if you do, you're just as locked down in some other structured program with limited options. And it's just infuriating, frustrating. I'm so glad I'm out of it. Now I still have, you know, 401ks and whatever, but they're just idling. They're just sitting there without any more contributions to them.
Yeah. Well, we can put purpose. And if I say that, your capital, yours, mine, the listener, the viewer, your capital should have a purpose. You should give your capital a purpose, right? And even if they're different segmented, you know, and like you mentioned earlier, I think the title of my talk in 2024 was the proper structure of assets for passive income in retirement, right? So I'm just pointing out that you should have purpose to all of your capital, no matter where it is. And as we age, you know, it becomes more and more important, or maybe on our radar, you know, what is this money doing and why is it there? It's okay to check for figs, is what I call, you know, you refer to in-force illustrations, you know, there's an original illustration and then you get annual reports and wonder why, you know, and look, you get quarterly reports when your money is at risk. You get annual reports when there is no risk of loss to your accounts. Just take that and apply that and you'll know what money you have exposed to risk, the risk of loss, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not even opposed to the market. I'm not opposed to anything other than, you know, certain things, communism, and there's a lot of things I'm opposed to, but I'm not opposed to anything in the financial world, okay? But and then too, I appreciate you bringing that up. W.C. Fields, oh, black and white. Dave, you young people, I know you don't know who W.C. Fields is. Look him up. It might be entertaining for you. But my quote is from W.C. Fields, and I forget what movie it was in, but, you know, him and Mae West, I mean, there's a whole lot you younger people have not been exposed to, and just go look up W.C. Fields or Mae West. They were funny. But W.C. Fields said, well, the broker made money and the firm made money, and two out of three ain't bad. Everybody at your table is probably making money. And whenever you see the majority of the people at your table and they're making money or they're being profitable, who's the schmuck that's not making money? And I'm not meaning to be disparaging at whatever at all. Not. It's likely you. So, mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, it's like this. Yeah, like they say, right? It's like they say, if you don't know who the sucker is, you're the sucker.
Exactly. You know. So, I love that. Okay, so you haven't really done anything but finance three cars. I love that. You're going to finance those cars
right.
Anyway.
I haven't done anything, but.
Yeah, right. Finance three cars.
Right. Yeah, it's just right. It's, you know, $60,000 or $70,000 worth of financing, but you know, it's nothing. And it's interesting how casual that becomes. Right? You just do this thing, and it becomes second nature, and you know, no big deal. Of course, I'm going to do that. And. Well,
go, keep going. I don't want to interrupt, please.
It's natural. It's just what you do. It's inconceivable to go talk to the finance guy in the car dealership anymore. And like, no, I'll be writing a check for this. Right. Yeah. And there's no enticement. There's no discount you're going to give me that's going to change that, because not only am I buying the car with this, right? I'm using it with a purpose to pay myself, right? To get that paid up addition in there. So thanks, but no thanks.
I love that. That's kind of where I was going to go. You know, the whole attitude of, even the whole method and process, and I know it's changed naturally anyway because of, you can buy cars online and have them delivered, but it is fundamentally changes the interaction that you, the buyer, has with whatever you're purchasing at these levels, right? It's a totally different mindset, and you don't have to suffer through the old sales process. Like I mentioned earlier, my father was a wholesaler, right? I've been to, like many other people, you know, been to all these new car dealerships over the years, and I gotta say, you mentioned the F&I guy. That is the most profitable man on the floor. He makes more than the salesman. He makes more than the general salesman. He makes more than the assistant general sales. He makes more. I mean, the guy makes a lot of money because they make a lot of money whenever it comes to financing and insurance, right? Anyway, so I mean, it's just a different mindset whenever, you know, it's like, this is what I want, and this is, you know, how I'm going to pay for it. And I'm going to write a check. You know, if I can, and I sure don't want to take any time away from you, but my wife collects Great Danes and cars, apparently. Okay. So the last automobile we purchased, you know, so she bought a car and the service was terrible. And so I inherited it. You know, I like it, so I drive it, and I deal with the service people. The car's great. Anyway, so then she's like, I'm just not going to deal with this dealership anymore. And I'm just speaking directly to service, you know. Service matters. And when you put your money into something, just life insurance, automobiles, houses, I don't care what you buy, you know, there's a certain expectation that service and support's going to be available. You know, beyond the sale, beyond the purchase, right? Didn't exist. So my wife's over it, and she's full of grace, but they abused her grace terribly. Anyway, so she buys another car, and we're going in and talking to this beautiful salesperson. He's lovely. He's like service oriented, knowledgeable, and accommodating. And but I asked him. I said, "How many? What's the percentage?" Or well, he went down the line after, you know, my wife decided what she wanted and all that. He just immediately starts talking about leasing. You know, he said, well, all of my clients lease. And I said, but before that, I asked how many trade-ins are paid for, you know, and he said, well, there are none of them. He said, all of my clients lease. And I'm like, perfect. Can you work me up a leasing agreement? And he said, sure. And I use that, and the leasing payment is exactly what my wife has to pay for that car. That's her car payment, right? So I have documentation on, if you're going to go buy this car, this is a lease payment that's required by the dealership, honey. So that's your payment.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's a beautiful
right. Car. And go ahead and lease it. So in effect, you're just renting it. And oh, by the way, limited on the miles you can drive. Right. Yeah. And the outcome is and go pick a new car, please, off the lot to rent from me for the next whatever 3, 4, 5 years. I completely do not understand that concept at all. It's very profitable, like you said. That lease guy, that finance guy, they're always smart. They're impressive people, but I don't want to have to deal with them.
Oh yeah, I'm not disparaging any of them. It's just I don't want to go through the process, you know. And I'm a capitalist. I'm glad they're profitable. I'm just pointing out who's the most profitable. And then if you really think that through, all right. So you go purchase a car. You tell me who you think the most profitable individual is in my example. And my example is you, the consumer, is going to the dealership to buy a car. So, you know, the car manufacturer made a profit, or you're not buying it, right? You know, the dealer made a profit, or he's not selling it. You know, the salesman made a profit or commission or whatever. And you know, the F&I guy makes the most money on the floor, right? So, you know, he's probably, so everybody's profitable in the deal. You know who made the most money, who was the most profitable in that whole deal? It's the guy that the F&I, the finance and interest guy, connected you with. Whoever's performing the banking function on that automobile makes more than all of the other players, all of the other characters in the play. It's the banker. And it's like, that's a fact. And you can always find the anomaly that's outside, you know, the curve. but the banker makes the most, banking is the most profitable business in the world. Hence, Nelson, you know, everybody should be in two businesses. Whatever it is you do for a living, and it doesn't mean you have to be an entrepreneur, an investor, or, you know, a business owner. No, no, no. Your household should operate like a business when it comes to finances, money and cash flows and banking. I mean, in my personal opinion, right? So you don't have to do anything exotic to control the banking function in your life. So whatever it is you do for a living, I don't care if it's a W-2 job, 1099, I don't care what kind of what you do to work, right? Mm-hmm. The second job you should have is performing the banking function. And hands down, you win in my opinion, in my experience. And then talk about a peaceful life. Oh, I've got a death benefit. I've got, you know, I need all the help I can get personally with discipline, right? So here I've got discipline and paying premiums, and then I get the privilege of checking for figs. You know, here's the original illustration. Dividends are going to go up and down. Potentially, they will. There's no potential there. It's a matter of time. And then I'm either going to lower premiums some years I have to, raise them every year that I can, and then check for figs is my terminology in the future years. You go forward 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever it is. I said I was going to do this. The company said they were going to do that, and now I have an in-force illustration. Did I do what I said I was going to do, and did the company do what they said they were going to do? Mm-hmm. That is just more form on discipline and purpose of your capital, my opinion.
Yeah.
So
it works. That's the other thing that's kind of, it's unusual. I don't want to say disconcerting or whatever, but you it's not common to have these things where it just, you made this agreement. Yes. You signed it and I signed it, and you go on I do what I said, you do what you said, and it just works out. The things align. There's no risk. There's no surprises. You don't have to call me. You haven't had to call me despite all the chaos of the last 6-7 years. You haven't had to call me and say, you know, we need to talk. We've had a problem here, or this didn't go here, or this company didn't do what they said they were going to do. It's like the sun rising in the morning. They're doing what they said they would do. They're doing what they said what they created a business to do many, many years ago. And, you know, we're just chugging along. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, so they'll keep doing what they're doing.
I thank you for pointing that out. I love that. There's a reason we represent the companies that we do. Right? I am not interested, and I'm an investment advisor. I have, you know, those. I have clients in the market and all that. I am not interested ever in calling a client or a beneficiary of a client, the family left over once a client graduates, and having to apologize for anything. You know, so I'm sorry, and have them in a worse position beyond me. I mean, when I'm wrong, I can apologize and have no qualms about that. I don't want to put them in a position that I have to feel bad about and just put them through that, whatever that bad position may be. I'm not interested. I'd rather walk away, you know, personally. So there's a reason we don't write for every company out there on the market. And I'm not being disparaging on the companies. I'm just saying the proper company selection is important, right? So I'd rather call my clients and talk about hunting or fishing or, you know, whatever fabulous going on there in their life, traveling or whatever. But when there's a problem, if there is a problem, whatever it may be, you know, I would project this onto you. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but if something did go wrong, whether it's actual or perceived, or, I mean, you want me to answer the phone when you call, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and you know, I'm only a man, right? So there's two beautiful ladies up front that answer the phone all day long to provide support. And I think that's important. So,
mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, no, every time I call the office, they've been very receptive, very helpful. I always get a call back or an email right away. I've never had to call and remind somebody. If anything, it's the other way around, right? I call and ask for something, and like, well, just get us this, or let us know when you want to follow up, and then I'll forget, and it'll be a month later. I'm like, oh yeah, I was supposed to call them, but no, I've had nothing but great experiences with the people in your office. It's been fantastic.
Perfect. I appreciate you agreeing with me. I agree. I think that they're awesome. And, you know, I sure can't do what I do without them. And nor would I want to, you know, I mean, I rely on them. You know, if I want to make a loan repayment or whatever, if I have, you know, been out of shape from a life insurance company, my perception of their inactivity or their mistake, whatever the case may be, I'm walking right up front. I'm like, Sue, you know, Megan. It's like, what? Anyway. What does your future look like? You know, so you haven't, you know, you've only financed 3 cars, 60 or 70,000. I love how casual you are about that. I appreciate that. I think financing cars are a big deal, but, you know, what do you see in the future? Do you, you know, what do you think?
So my youngest son never came out and said it. I've been married, 33 years, coming on 34 years now.
Dang, you don't look that old.
Oh, sorry. Look at all this. This is insane. Two boys, 20, almost 27, and just in February will turn 23. So my youngest has always been the entrepreneurial sort. My oldest is an engineer working at a firm, but my youngest has always been entrepreneurial, went and mowed lawns and got himself jobs and saving money and wants to do things. And so we've talked over the years, what kind of business would you like to do if you started your own or what have you? And over the years we've thought about stuff like, rental properties. Initially he was wanting to buy houses and improve them, and he was going to live in a one part of a duplex or a fourplex and rent out the rest and make money that way. I've thought about investing in equipment, dump trucks and backhoes, that kind of thing, and either running it myself or renting them out. My son has a girlfriend who's very entrepreneurial, and so she does things, she does marketing for all kinds of firms. And one of the things she's talking about is a studio to let the public rent and do various functions in. And so there's all kinds of things he and I talk about, potential investments, and we're getting closer and closer. He and I have this, he's like, man, I got to do something, you know? And here I am getting closer and closer to not necessarily full retirement, but retiring from this job. To where I want to do something different. And I think we're approaching the point where we make a decision, and it's going to involve and rely on heavily the cash value from this policy that I've been investing in, right? This banking resource that I've been building for 7 years now, specifically as a banking resource. Like I said, the other things aside, the death benefit and what have you, I think it's going to come to fruition sooner rather than later.
I got you. So until it, whatever it turns out to be, comes into fruition, you're just steadily capitalizing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's mm-hmm. wrong with that? And then, too, I gotta take a side note. Look, the heavy equipment, you know, at one time, that stuff sold for like a dollar a pound. Like you had a 50,000-pound bulldozer, you know, it was a $50,000 machine. Then it got up to $10 a pound. And I think in the last couple of years, I think it's reached $100 a pound on average. Man. Is that about right? I don't know.
So I've never looked at it in that context. I'm going to go do that right now. I've never heard it put that way. They are not cheap. I tell you that. It's eye-watering to look at the price of trucks and the Bobcats, anything like that. It's eye opening.
So when you look into that, you know, when you get around to, if you do look into it, would you share that with me? Cause I think I'm accurate, you know, and.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. And then the operators, like, you know, you may retire, change the way you work from your current, you know, endeavors. It's like, man, you have that heavy equipment out there and you have an operator on that equipment. That's not chump change. I mean, that's real money that those things cost, mm-hmm. you know, for the consumer. If I want to clear land or whatever it is I'm doing, you know, building a pad for real estate, whatever it is, man, that costs money. That's real money. I mean, that could be big money when you have an operator that knows what they're right. doing on equipment. And it's like,
right. And they're not just laying around, right? You got to pay for good people. You've got to pay the maintenance, right? That's not cheap. These machines are more and more computerized, so you can't work on it in the field, right? Shade tree mechanic. So everything about it is more expensive. The fuel and the oil, it's intimidating.
Yeah. So cool. Well, so what else? What else would you like to?
I had one other thing I wanted to bring up when we were talking about my one friend in the insurance industry and his life insurance policy. I have another friend who I was this close to getting him to the client only event this year, but he backed out. I mean, I had a feeling he was going to do it because he went radio silent the last week leading up to the thing. But I had gotten him the book. He had talked to your office a little bit. He was going to be at the thing, but he backed out. But he's got a policy, and I don't know exactly which one it is, but it's one of these market-linked policies, UIL or what have you. And so we talked about it a little bit, and he has those rising premiums, and this thing is getting to the point. He's the same age I am. This thing is getting to the point where they're asking for more and more premium from him. And, you know, this thing is going to eat itself. He's been paying on it for 20 years. Yeah. And this thing is going to cannibalize itself, and he's going to end up with nothing, right, out of this policy that I'm trying to get him. Like, he know it's one of those things like going to the doctor when you think something's wrong. Like, he doesn't want to hear the bad news here. But the longer you ignore it, the worse it's going to get. Yeah. So I need to find the way. I've got to be a better salesman. I've got to get him in front of somebody to sit down and look at his policy and give him an honest, you know, review of his situation and maybe get him into a better policy.
Tell him to call. I mean, you know, we'll it's straightforward, you know, it's, I mean, tell him to call. I'd love to talk to him, have a conversation with him and whatever he does. But it's okay to understand what you have, you know, and so we'll make it as painless for him as possible. But, you know, if there's pain, do you want a little pain now or a lot of pain later? You know, is that Jim Rohn? Right. We all suffer from one or two pains, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. You know, it's like, if it's wrong, whatever it is, it should be corrected as soon as possible. Right. So right. I appreciate you, you know, sharing that with me. That's a big deal today. The, you know, Equity Index Universal Life, they dropped the E. Now it's IUL Index Universal Life. And, you know, you can go all over TikTok and you have these people talking about, you know, all the benefits of IUL and I mean, these are legitimate life insurance agents. I'm not saying they on TikTok are all legitimate life insurance agents. I'm just saying there are legitimate life insurance agents. They just don't know life insurance. They don't have any experience with universal life. They don't have any experience with, you know, IUL or VUL. And, you know, and they are promoting what they believe is correct. I believe that they want the best outcome for their clients and their friends and their family, right? I don't think they understand what really happens to an IUL, any kind of universal life over time. And you know, they're taking the life insurance at face value and going through that training. How do you sell this product? How do you position it? You know, you talk about the upside. There's no downside. You talk about all these things in a cursory way where the consumer will say yes. And then I don't think that the agent, the advisor that continues promoting IUL has done their due diligence, because if you look into that as an agent and advisor and you get past the marketing material, you get past the propaganda that's put out by the life insurance companies, the companies that issue this, you would walk away from that, in my opinion. And I could be wrong. And I'll say it again. I've said it many times in front of rooms full of life insurance agents. There's only two kinds of agents that write universal life. Two. My humble opinion. Two and only two. The ignorant, they don't know. Right? They haven't done this. They don't have the experience. They haven't done the research. They haven't got past the propaganda from the insurance companies. And ignorance can be corrected. Right? It's not a negative thing. And then there's the other one. if they do know, they're not ignorant. They understand how universal life works, even beyond the sales marketing way. You just don't build it exactly this way or you build it that way. They're not ignorant. If they're not ignorant and they still promote and present that, then it becomes a moral issue, in my opinion. There's one that doesn't know, one that knows and does it anyway, and I want to know which one you would like to engage with, the ignorant or the less than honest or the moral issue. That's neither. So anyway, there is a way to have universal life. There is a way to potentially improve yourself, whether it's moving into another policy and the benefits of that or the cost of that, all that has to be weighed. But if you can't move, maybe you're uninsurable. You know, here his and everybody's price is going to go up on universal life, and or the death benefit is going to go down, right? So the price is going to go up. And the death benefit is going to go down, or either one of them are going to happen, or both of them are going to happen. So if you're uninsurable, if you're in a position where you have universal life and it's cannibalizing itself, there may be things that you can do where you don't have to move and burn it all down and start over. I mean, that may be what is best for you, but maybe you can't do that. Then what do you do? Mm-hmm. Right? There are things that can be done to mitigate that loss that you have coming. So thanks for letting me share that too.
All right. And inevitably, getting back to what I said before, right, you and I have never had that call about, oh, hey, I've got some bad news or we need to talk about this. It's inevitable with those kind of policies that there's going to be a call, right? Your premium is going up, or your death benefit is going down. We have to talk about this. Or, you know, you can just ignore it, right, and let the problem, let the surprise come away at the end when we need to talk about cash or using this policy, right?
Yep. If they don't get a call, they're going to get a notice from the life insurance company. Your premium's gone up, so it requires this much more premium, you know. Yeah. those are inevitable. So all right, what else, young man? Anything other, you know?
I think I've said everything I had in mind. It's been exactly what I had hoped it would be. The contract, the underwriting process was easy. The materials I've read, the things I was led to expect is what happened in reality. The using the policy and the benefits and whatever else has been completely boring, been mundane, and it's been exactly what I wanted. I couldn't be happier with it.
I appreciate you sharing that. Finance three cars. I know the answer. I have an idea of what the answer may be, but what is the value of you and your son and his girlfriend? What is the value of you and your son working through the possibilities that y'all may put your hand toward together? Y'all may do these things together, and you've talked about it over some period of time. It's going to come to, it's going to happen. What is the value of that, Greg?
It's immeasurable, right? It would be a dream, right? You have children and you raise them and educate them and send them off on their own, you know, and hope for the best. If I could find a way to participate, right, in a venture with him and build something together, get to work with him and benefit from that every day as far as I can, and then leave something to him in the future to carry on out. There is no price you could put on that.
Exactly. Yeah. I expected you to say, I'm a father, I expected you to say something like that. And there's sure as heck no way to put the value of that on a life insurance illustration, is there?
Oh, no, not at all. There is no column for that.
Yeah. I love that. Thanks. You know, I think I said it before we turned the cameras on, but I don't generally listen to podcasts. I have a difficult time listening to myself and I think, that it may or may not be normal, but this episode, sir, is one that I will listen to. I think this was good. I really do, because of what you've shared, what we were able to talk about, and points that were brought out that, you know, it may seem like minutia, it may seem like nuance. It's not. If you listen to what this man says, I think you'd be better off. So I'm going to listen to this again, and I appreciate you taking the time, making the time available for, to speak with us. So thank you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. It's been fun. I was a little nervous, but it this has been fun.
Perfect. Well, I had fun too. Okay, thanks again, and then we'll talk. You know, whenever you need us, we're here, sir. Okay.
Yeah, I still owe you. I have some homework to do. We talked about me getting some information back to you about financial planning and what have you. So I haven't forgotten. I've just been lazy.
Parkinson's law is real, right? When you get around to it, we'll be here. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, Greg. Have a good weekend.
So, all right, sir. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.